Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR Boston.
It's snack time, the kind of endless thread episode where we snack.
Which will mean something to some of you, but nothing to a lot of you, probably.
Well, do you know about snacks?
I know about snacks. So let's explain. I want to shout out our technical director, Paul Vikas, from whom this brilliant idea came somewhat accidentally. I think it was like an autocorrect situation where he was typing snack time and it autocorrected to snake time. And we were like, Paul, this is genius. We have to do a snack time about snakes. And then I think you were like, no, it's got to be snack time. You want to explain that part of it?
Yeah, well, you know, snacks is the internet's way of saying snakes.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's like the doge of snakes.
Absolutely.
Okay. No snacks, just snacks today.
Just snacks.
Yeah. You want to go first?
Okay. So I'm going to tell you about a response to an Ask Reddit thread. The question was, what's your worst encounter with a wild snake?
Okay. Off to a great start.
Top comment on this was from Prince Nebula 18, and they wrote, when my best friend slept with my boyfriend. That was their answer.
Oh.
You know, it had to be. It had to be. But okay, here's the real story.
Mm-hmm.
It's from user F4T45H35.
Of course.
Well, this is odd timing, they say. Yesterday, I became the owner of a snake. I went upstairs to the bathroom. Downstairs was occupied. I'm sitting. I'm chilling. Typical day. Until I glance to my left, and by the toilet is this 2.5-foot snake coiled up looking at me. So I have a kid. I figured this was some kind of hilarious prank. Well, it wasn't. It was real. I poked it, thinking nothing of it, and it starts slithering towards me. Lucky for me, I was already in position to be scared that bad. It hid behind the toilet, and I promptly finished and got up. Went and found a bucket and came back and caught it. It's an albino corn snake. I was in no danger, so I wouldn't say a worst experience, though for sure scariest. Everyone we've talked to says it was probably a neighborhood pet that climbed into the sink or toilet and made its way to our house in the plumbing.
What? Like it went in the pipes?
Yeah. Yes.
Snakes can come up through my pipes?
Yes. So now I'm going to tell you a quick other story really fast about my old neighborhood in Brooklyn, New York.
Uh-huh.
This happened a year after I moved there. This is from a New York Daily News story in 2007. Forget the monsters under the bed. There really are slithery creatures lurking in the pipes. Nature's Call forced Nadege Brunacci, 38, to the dark bathroom in her Cobble Hill, Brooklyn apartment in the wee hours of Monday morning. While washing her hands, she glanced back at the toilet to find a 7-foot-long python staring back at her.
What?
I turned on the light and screamed, oh my God, said the hysterical restaurateur. That's very New York Daily News style. It still makes my heart race. Yes, this is a real story. It happened in my old neighborhood, Cobble Hill, Brooklyn. They had to call the snake people, the snack people, to come and pull the thing out.
What if it had come up while she was going? I'm so upset to know. Like, that's one of those things that as a little kid, you would say, there could be a snake in the
toilet.
Right,
it's like alligators in the sewer.
And your parents would be like, no, honey, that's not real.
Yeah.
It could be.
But it's real.
I'm upset. I wish good things to all living creatures, but I do not want a snake in my toilet.
That's not how you want to meet a snake?
No. Oh, man.
All right.
Let's take a little snake break, and then I'll tell you one.
Snake break.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
What do you got?
Okay, mine comes from a TIL. This was posted by a user named Labyrinth Luminary. And they say, TIL, Bill Haast began extracting snake venom at 15 years old. He founded the Miami Serpentarium, and he injected himself with venom for 60 plus years. His blood was used to save 21 snake bite victims. He created a venom serum to cure polio. He was bitten over 170 times and lived to be 100.
Wow.
Yes. I read in the New York Times that he handled more than 3 million poisonous snakes over the years. And it's true. He would, like, inject himself with venom as kind of like a scientific experiment. So he was building up immunity by doing this. And he actually was collecting snakes from all over the world, starting with in Florida, where there are a lot of venomous snakes. He was housing these snakes in what they said were like strict lab conditions and then making their venoms available to a broader scientific community in a way that they could be studied, they could be experimented with. They were trying to use them to cure certain diseases or as different remedies. And it's said that this guy, his hands were like destroyed. He was missing a fingertip. He clearly wore the signs of having been bitten over 173 times.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's regarded as a legend. And one of my favorite little factoids about him is that he bought his first exotic snake. It was a diamondback rattler from a catalog. And this is way back in the day. And he sees that it came from Florida. So he's like, oh, I've got to get to Florida. So he actually goes to airline mechanic school. He gets a job as a flight engineer with Pan American World Airways, and he started traveling the world and smuggling snakes.
Oh, my God.
And with these smuggled snakes, he opens this, like I said, this Miami Serpentarium where he was housing them, and he was the pioneer of venom production for venom research.
All right.
Bill Haast.
All right, that's pretty good snack time.
Can I tell you one other funny little story?
Okay, sure.
Okay, so this one is from TIFU, Today I F'd Up.
Okay. Okay, yes.
So here's the post. I'm just going to read it. So a little backstory. To my knowledge, I'm just about an eighth Native American. But when they found out that when you're applying to college, you just need to be like 1/16th Native American in order to put that on your application, he was like, okay, oh, this is great. I've been told that I am, you know, an eighth Native American and that I'm from this tribe of people called the Yuan-Ti. Does that name mean anything to you, Ben?
Yuan Ti.
Yuan Ti. Have you heard of that before?
No.
Okay, so he says, or she says, confirmed with my parents and sent in my application as 1/8 Yuan Ti tribe. I found out all these years that this is a fictional race of snake people from Dungeons and Dragons.
You know what's so funny is I was going to say this. I was going to say, oh my God, I'm so mad at myself that I didn't guess this because I'm just starting to play Dungeons and Dragons. I just like set up a new character to play Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to guess that this is like a fictional snake people tribe. And there you have it. I should have guessed.
Yep. He says, TLDR, I told everyone I know that I was a fictional snake person. So that's our little snake roundup, our snack roundup.
Good snack time.
We'll be back next week with a full episode.
Bye.
See you then.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.